it's a side scroller.
You're a side scroller.
Your face is a side scroller.
Stop it. Alright.
Alright, more fun.
Hey, who's Tom Francis?
Some dude on the internet.
One of the internet boys.
One of them good internet boys. Okay, a country boy, but less useful.
Net boys.
What?
Well, you said less useful. It was hilarious.
Welcome to The Backlog, the show where we make good on Steam sale promises. I'm Calix.
I'm Christian.
I'm Sasha.
And this week's game is Morphblade. Please note that we will be getting into major spoiler territory.
So,
if you don't want to get spoiled for Morphblade, you should probably put this episode aside for a while. Wait until you've actually played Morphblade so you can think about it. Because we're going to spoil everything.
Every ending.
If you finish the game, or you don't mind spoilers for it, then settle it.
Good.
Oh, so good. Morphblade is an abstract-ish game about defeating waves of enemies by navigating around the board and using the ability of the tile you're standing on to attack or defend. This is a game by Francis?
Francois? Tom, is that how you pronounce it?
Tommy France. And
good old Tommy France.
He doesn't know it yet. Little did he know that Tom Francis is my anime rival.
Mm.
My nemesis. Oh, he makes me so mad. Tom Francis is one of those guys who makes making games look like it's just a thing you can do.
Just because you love him.
Just, like, you could just make a game, and that's okay? No.
It's not okay.
Not in my America.
Technically, Tom Francis is British, I think. So.
Even worse. Oh my god. Oh my, so, I should probably learn more about the man before I declare us mortal enemies. But... too late. I'm not taking that back.
Good. Always good to go into it and engage with people, knowing nothing about them.
Yeah. Alright, so, y'all played some Morphblade.
I did. I played, I think the furthest I got was 19.
I just read our okay. Structure. Did you finish the game? Did you watch an LP?
To be fair, I feel like watching a speedrunner on Morphblade could be really cool.
I'm gonna do that right now.
Yeah, just gonna pull that up.
Yeah, go ahead. No, keep talking.
Yeah, I got, like, maybe to wave 19 or move 19, I guess, because that's how it's counted. So I didn't get super far in, like, you mentioned at one point, like, that bombers became, like, as an enemy, a critical part, and I never actually saw them, because I'm bad at the game.
I never saw a bomber either.
Whoa, someone's at wave 182, and the subtext turns to, you shouldn't be able to get this far.
Oh dear. Oh my god! We're just like
there's just so many
that's enemies. Filled with enemies. There's like maybe what 15-20 hexes, and suddenly there were all of the enemies on every hex.
They seem to be surviving by using the teleport, which was always one of the things that I wanted. But the it's difficult to get a layout that works.
Yeah,
how far did you say you got?
I got to 13.
I made it to 51 because I'm one of those rad folk that everyone loves in games when
yeah.
People just do stuff.
I was gonna try to be competitive with you for like 2 seconds. And I was like, there is no way.
So did you you did not get any exploder bugs?
No. Which apparently is important for crafting your board.
Well, I mean, you're pretty much at the mercy of whatever random nonsense happens until you get something to explode. Basically, what happens is that there are infected ones. When they die, they destroy the tile they were on, and so you get to replace it. You get to put something else there. Mm. If you are on that tile, you die. So they get real tricky to get rid of. But yeah, it's problematic. I can't think while this is playing.
I had kind of a hard time balancing kiting enemies and navigating the board. There would be an enemy who pops up and I'm like, oh, I need to go get to a place where I can hurt them. And then another enemy would pop up and then kill me on the way to getting to the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I did really enjoy the upgrade system, where an enemy has to die on that tile to fill up a meter, and then once it's filled, you can add different features to that tile, like if it's like a teleport thing or a healing thing, that you, then you can deal damage from that tile to someone else, and or like expand the directions in which you can deal damage. I thought curating your tile to do different stuff was cool. I like making those decisions.
Yeah, and having the things that you can choose it to upgrade based on the surrounding tiles made the board building game loop really intriguing. Mm. I wish it was less random, because I found myself just getting mad at the board a lot. It's like, ugh,
yeah.
I'm not going to do that. Another stupid pusher block. Which tiles did you rely on the most?
Definitely the healing ones. Those were great. I mostly did the stabby one.
Stabbums.
Uh-huh. Where you could jet out to the sides. Yeah.
That's where I started. By the time I got to wave 50, or by the time I got to the point where I did that run, I had stopped using them almost entirely.
Hmm.
I had switched over to the arrows, which upgrade with themselves to let you go any number of spaces.
Oh, wow.
Including across gaps. So it's a good way to just beeline to safety. It would not get me to wave 180 on account of having seen that trash fire.
Mm.
But that and teleporting. The teleport tile is very, very powerful. The acid one is...
I never mastered that one.
I didn't understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's primarily to de-armor enemies. Mm. And it's easy to forget that you can just push enemies off the board. Even if you can't defeat them. You need to be like, alright, you're out of here.
That is mostly what I did, was just push them off the board.
Yeah.
It's weird, because in this game, and also in Banner Saga, in a lot of games, whenever an enemy has armor, it just means I hit them more. I don't ever have any different considerations, unless it's specifically, like, you cannot do damage to this enemy type unless you hit these soft spots on it specifically.
Yeah.
Almost always, whenever an enemy has armor, I just sort of hit it a bunch more.
Yeah, but here it means they can't be killed until you remove their armor or you push them off the board. So the game doesn't really have a finish. The board maxes out somewhere around wave 30.
Hmm.
In the end game, survival hinges pretty greatly on the free move teleport and the kill with teleport and the knockback on teleport. And the shield helps. The shield helps a lot. If you match up a health tile with a health tile, you can get an extra health.
Oh, that's cool.
So you'll get a shield that stays with you. So you get an extra hit for tricky situations. I never was able to use the explodey bugs to reconfigure the board, really.
Hmm.
It's just, it's too much work. It's too difficult. What was your impression of this game going in?
I knew that it made you angry, which is always good.
Yeah, lots of emotion over here on this side of the couch.
But it's like, it seemed like good angry, in that like, dang, this is good, instead of bad angry, which many games do. But I've seen your Steam update thing being like, oh, Calyx is playing. Worth playing again.
And then you're like, oh, Calyx is angry.
But yeah, that was basically it.
Yeah, one day Tom Francis will learn of our lifelong rivalry.
One day. How about you?
So, like usual, I had no idea what to expect. So, my idea of what it was going to be like was based on the name. So, I assumed that I was going to be this really cool character who can morph into different things and had a really cool blade and kill people.
And not like a little pixel thing.
That's exactly what it was.
No, but it was not.
You morphed into different things and you killed
people. Well, I thought it was going to be like, you know, a person. So then I, you know, it opens up and I'm just like, what is this? And, you know, there's these little things, the enemies, and I was so confused. I had no idea what it was, and I didn't know what the tiles did, and then, you know, I found out you could read about it, and I was like, but there's too many. How am I supposed to memorize this? And so it took me a while to kind of figure out what I was doing, and then I figured out, oh, I can, like, push them off the board and do this kind of stuff or whatever, and I didn't connect with it because it was just, like, a...
Too abstract?
Yeah. There's no people, and there was nothing to keep me really engaged, and it just, the amount of time it took me to understand how to progress, it was just really, really frustrating. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of those default games on a computer, like Minesweeper or Solitaire. Like, for me personally, it would be a game that I would play if I was A, super bored, or B, it was the only game that I had to play. Because that's when you play Minesweeper, like, on the computer. So, yeah, I didn't really like it.
I found out only after my best run that, because originally I was going to respond to the Zugzwang bit that it mentions in the title about the main menu includes sassy tips to let you know about things like Zugzwang, which is unsurprisingly a term from chess and means the disadvantage of having to take a move.
Hmm.
And so it said that it's thoroughly de-Zugzwanged because you could just click yourself to not take a move.
That was a thing you could do.
It's also true for the upgrade step.
Hmm.
For a long time, I thought you had to upgrade anytime you... But you don't. You could just not.
I knew you could not move, but I didn't want to because I was afraid that I was going to die. Because when you die, you gotta go back to the beginning. Yeah. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
So, yeah, all your progress was just, no, wave one.
Yeah. So this game was explicitly designed as a counterpoint to Imbroglio, a game by Michael Bro. And that game was very similar in terms of there are these tiles that spawn things. But one of the things that it did differently is it had changing walls. So basically the idea was that the maze would change or whatever. So you had to go back through the maze and deal with the enemies according to a new landscape each time.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that he got rid of was the walls. And so this game is basically a design critique response of this other game, Imbroglio.
Was the other one also this abstract?
Yes, it's quite abstract. It's a little bit more concrete. I believe it has, like, actual monster-looking things, and there's a little bit more sense of there's a space being manipulated that you're in this labyrinth thing, but it's still quite abstract. I really, really wanted to make my own response game to this one.
Mm-hmm.
I have not yet had the time to do so. I'm going to blame it on my day job.
Which has you crunching most of the time. I feel like that's fair.
We had a release.
Yeah. How long has that been true?
Well, I mean, we have patches pretty frequently, but it's getting better, but it still takes up a great deal of my time and makes it harder to want to spend my free time on a passive-aggressive response game to knock Tom Francis down a peg.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, good luck, buddy.
And remind him that I am and always have been his rival. He forgets sometimes.
He forgets all the time because you haven't
He told forgets him. Constantly.
You haven't even told him.
Quick, nobody tell him. Nobody tell him. So he keeps forgetting.
Tom Francis, don't read. Don't Everyone read. Else. Hello. I do think that I agree with you, Christian, that the abstract nature of it sort of worked against it, at least for me. I think it serves the game well. I think this is kind of a matter of taste. But not having that, like you were talking about, there weren't even, like, human figures in it. There weren't people or faces or anything that you could, like, really connect to. And that's a very, like, art psychological thing. Mm-hmm.
I think it would have also made the fact that when you die, you just go back to the beginning a lot harder. I think it would have made that process, that there would have needed to be some other thing happening to alleviate that.
Well, that's a roguelike, right? That's just what a roguelike is. But I feel like if it had any character, if the art design had any real character beyond being abstract, I mean, it's understandable because this game is literally a design response. Like, that's all this game is. It's the counterpoint of a conversation that's going on between two designers. But as a game, outside of that context, without any appeal in the art design to really connect to, it's easy to be like, okay, I lost this weird abstract game of chess, and now that I know, like, at least for me, now that I know how the game works, I have a good picture of what the game plays like. Mm-hmm. I don't have really an incentive to keep pushing myself against it.
Yes.
Whereas, like, a thing that might have actually kept me engaged is something like, even an art style as cute and appealing as, like, Plants vs. Zombies or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think going cute would have been, or like if you had done something like Darkest Dungeon, where it's although the reason I'm saying cute is to sort of alleviate the stakes, so that when you do lose the board, it doesn't feel as bad. Whereas if it were something grimmer and heavier like Darkest Dungeon, then you would have sort of the weight of these fates of these people on your hands, and you might not want to go back in and like play it again. Whereas if you lose a little like mushroom buddy, let's get another mushroom buddy, it's fine.
Yeah.
But your mushroom buddy... A mushroom buddy's dead. Think about that.
They are sentient. We just have a lot of them.
I agree with you that there was really no incentive to keep going or anything to really keep me engaged. Mm-hmm. Once I kind of got an understanding, like, oh, I'm kind of working through this, I'm feeling it a little bit, that's it. All right, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your response to this game was initially seemed quite sour. Is that...
It's kind of like a combination of everything, where you had to keep going back to the beginning, and it took me so long to figure it out that I kept dying, and so it was just so frustrating, and I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm like, I'm doing this because Kayla's got a 51, and I have to try. I have to try to at least... I didn't want to stop at, like, 3, because then it's like, that's pretty pathetic, so I had to keep going because you got such a high score. That was the fuel that kept me going.
Yes, competition, what brings us all together.
Yeah, that was the only reason, because I would not play this. Mm.
I had played this game before we brought it on to the backlog, but not a lot. Mm. Like, I'd probably played it for an hour prior to this. Enough to get the idea. I'd probably made it to wave 20 or something like that. Mm. And to see the upgrade mechanic, to see the explodey bugs, and then to be like, well, that was a game. Moving on with my life. And I do think that it has a little bit of a problem bridging the gap between introducing you to its concepts and convincing you that they're cool. Because, like you said, it has kind of a problem introducing you to its concepts initially, where everything sort of happens, and I enjoy the way that it layers in its tutorial into the gameplay. Mm. And if you hover over a tile, it'll tell you what it does, and if you right-click another tile, it'll tell you how you can upgrade it, and all these things. So it's very contextually aware of what you're doing and tries to give you the information that you need. But there's so much esoteric, abstract information that you need in order to succeed, that it takes a while before you have to have gone through the game a number of times, having failed, in order to have the information that you need to even start succeeding. Mm-hmm. And once you have that, it seems like that's where, like, I had the advantage of being at that point when we started playing the backlog again. Or started playing it for the backlog. Mm-hmm. So that being the case, I got to push through to trying to maximize and make better choices about it. Whereas the two of you basically only made it as far as, oh, here's what the game is. Mm-hmm. Kind of similar to everything, where by the end of playing it, it was like, all right, cool, you finished the tutorial. Mm-hmm. And while it didn't say that here, it was basically true. So mm-hmm. I do feel that that's one of the weaknesses of this game.
I'm curious as to, because you've sort of explained the reasons that you slid off of the game. I wonder if there is something, like a tweak or a shift that you could make on the game that would draw you back into it? Mm-hmm. Like, if Tom Prentice released Warblade 2.0 or something, and changed a thing, or a couple of things. Like, maybe you keep the board at the end of a run, or the art style is updated, or what do you think would...
I think the art style, definitely... And then, like, cooler sound effects.
Hmm? you just needed a crunchier experience. You needed the art to sell itself better.
Yeah, and then something else. Oh, just learning how to play. Like, it would have been cool if there was, like, an actual tutorial to show you, like, this is what this does. Because I don't know how long it took me to realize that you can even, like, hover. Well, I did hover above it, and then when it describes what it does... I would, like, immediately forget what it did, because there was, like, so many. And then, I don't think I ever discovered that you could right-click things. But, yeah, because, you know, you play other games, and it kind of has a person or something, like, this is how you do this, and it, like, walks you through it a little bit, and I was just like, what is this, for the longest time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe having, because they do have, like, little pop-ups when you first start playing, but I think maybe having a particular tutorial space... So that you can sort of play around and mess up in sort of a safe place to fail. Even if it's just literally the same grid, but set aside so that when you come into the game later, once you've sort of been introduced to all the different tiles, they can still have the overlays and whatnot, but just like a little bit more direct hand-holding. And sometimes in a tutorial that can be a little overbearing, but it's better to be overbearing and learn the game than to get sort of dropped into the deep end and slide off of it because you don't know what's happening.
Yeah. There was no, like, music or anything, right?
No.
Yeah, because it was just kind of silent and there was, like, that, like, that sound. And then, like, if you, like, you know, hit somebody, it was like, or, like, I don't know what sound it was. But, yeah, better sound effects would have been cool. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, in Minesweep. Is that what it's called? I mean, it's also a very simple game, but for a really long time when I was younger, like, I was just really into it, and I think it was because of when everything blew up, it was like, oh, and, like, really dramatic.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the little face would die.
Yeah. It has to have some exciting elements, but the whole thing was a little just bleak.
Mm. So, what would you do to the aesthetic? What would you want to do to the art to make it connect more? Or, the opposite of that, how would you use this art style to tell either a story or have a game system that you would connect with more emotionally? Is this art style itself not, like, salvageable, but, like, is it something that you could work with for one of your own things?
Yeah, definitely. I think the immediate example that pops up in my mind is, like, Thomas Was Alone, which is...
That's actually, I was...
Yeah, which is a game specifically about a geometric square, and all of the other characters in it are, like...
slightly different shapes or colors.
Yeah, like, a shorter, like, wider rectangle, or a very tall rectangle or a circle. I think it's a circle. And it's a side-scroller, and you're just moving through these very, very simple spaces, and they have, like, a little bit of atmosphere to them, but they're all... It's all 2D. It's all, like, basic shapes. And there's... I know there's another game that I've played that has very simple aesthetics. Another one that pops to my mind is N+, which is a game where you are a tiny little ninja dude, and you're jumping around on, again, these, like, side-scrolling areas, like, dodging missiles and killing things, and it's a puzzle room where you go from the start to the door at the end.
Spoilers. I mean,
but it's the same. Well, it's not quite the same because you have a human figure in it. I think there is some merit to the abstract there in Morphblade. I mean, Space Invaders, right? The alien designs on that are not significantly more detailed than the ones in Morphblade. I think it's possible to tell even a rudimentary story or make a compelling game. I just think that there wasn't enough here. And I think that the gameplay didn't hold its own narrative, I think, is the issue that I have with it. I mean, it kind of does, but it's a binary that I don't really connect to. It's like, oh, either I did well on this encounter or I died.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room for failure states. Did you enjoy the game?
No.
Okay, but did you like it?
No. I
mean, no. did you enjoy it?
I thought it was interesting. I don't know that I enjoyed it or would play it again. I enjoy that the two of you hate Tom Francis for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Much as I hate admitting it, I did like this game.
I mean, I like his other work a lot. I think he's a very good designer. I just didn't like Morphblade very much.
One of the other things that we do is we talk about what would you make like this? And part of my answer is that I would get a bit more into both expanding the tutorial to be a little bit more handholdy, a little bit more pervasive, and also to try to inject a little bit more character into the proceedings. He actually already does this a little bit. There is text to let you know about your current progress. Mm-hmm. And in the speedrun we just looked up, it said you shouldn't be able to make it this far.
That's really good.
And other times it's like, you're doing pretty good, you're almost there. Mm-hmm. But this is a pretty good run, actually. And it's a bit conversational.
It does that.
Yeah. Down here, there was this text down at the bottom here that changes as you progress. Oh. But I feel like it could have been used a lot more. In the same thing as Thomas Was Alone. Mm. And also, I was trying to look it up because I don't remember.
Or just a better color palette. It's all very muted dark greens and black and white. It's all very, like, tactical colors that are not particularly fun to look at.
It reminds me of, like, if you're watching Star Wars or something, and they have those clear screens with, like, all the battle strategies and everything. It's very mechanical, and yeah, that's what it reminds me of a little bit.
I mean, even those have the appeal of being weird glass structures, right? Like,
yeah. This had none of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not an especially beautiful game. There was a game I was trying to look up. It's called something impossible to look up, like Lines or something like that. And essentially, it was a version of Snake. But your little snake would say things. Mm. And the enemy snakes would say things. And that added so much character to what is literally just Snake. Mm. It's just Snake, and it speeds up, and it's got some cool effects and stuff. But that added a lot. And I think that a similar kind of thing where that text at the bottom of the screen, or on your character, or... on particularly, like, there's a special enemy that shows up that is like a regular enemy but colored black, and when you kill that character or that bug or whatever, it will automatically upgrade whatever thing it died on. It will always appear alone, so that you can kill it wherever you want to. And, like, that one should have been a speaking role to try to get that extra bit of character into it. And I feel like Morphblade is a good version of itself, and so I don't want any of this to sound like I know better than the designer as to what experience was intended. But, like I said, despite really enjoying this game, I didn't actually play it that much before focusing on it for the podcast, and I don't really intend to keep playing it now. I made it to how far I made it, and I'm kind of done with it. And the reasons for it are surely come down to personal taste, but the primary thing that I would want to address if I were making the game that I still plan on making at some point, if I can find the time to rub it in his face, the thing I want to address is what would keep me coming back to it for more than just a couple hours? What would give this the replayability that makes it more than just being an interesting problem to solve? Because it's, even having made it to 50, I can't do that reliably. Like, that's, I haven't mastered the game in any capacity, so it's not like it has nothing else for me, but it has stopped being a draw for me. And so part of it is what you're talking about. It's not pretty. I would want to make it so that progression makes the board more beautiful. Part of that could be, I mean, aside from just having different art, but having the degree to which things are built up gain complexity as you go, instead of, because currently it just gains an extra little icon. But fundamentally it hasn't changed. Whereas if this was an RTS or something like that, you would have a totally different building, or like, to just having more art assets to express the ideas would be helpful. In addition, it would make it so that I think you could get an easier read on what's happening. Because there's a lot of digesting of information that you have to do in order to be able to figure out what's going to happen when you do a thing.
In its simplicity, there's definitely a loss of information there. Even just the basic of, because you have symbols for what each of the tiles does, but if you had, for instance, a color that went with that symbol, if the health tile was always green, then you could read the board much more quickly. The image that popped into my mind when you were talking about these different tiles sort of informing each other is sort of a watercolor effect, where colors bleed into each other, so that at the end of your run, even if you lose, you still have this beautiful thing that you can, like, screenshot and show to your friends and keep.
Yeah, having your tactical decisions result in both a history of what you did and a beautiful picture at the end of it would be really nice. And actually, I really like the idea of the watercolor thing, because that feeds into some of the stuff that I would want to do of having that history displayed. Because you in the later game, just fly around the board, but I feel like you make a lot of self-similar movements. And if there was some aspect of, like, you're building a path, essentially, through these repetitive movements, one of the first things that I'd want to change is I would want to give the game a progression beyond what it currently has. Like, waves are cool. Floors are cooler. I'd want to make it so that if you get to the level, like level 30 or whatever, where you fill the board, you should be able to start on a new level. Go up a floor, start again, and now you're bringing with it some element of extra ability or extra what have you. We'll need to get into the specifics.
Like, there's perks to progressing.
Exactly. And one of the other things about that would be, I want there to be more levels of failure. Currently, you go pretty quick from doing great to being dead. You get to get hit once, or you can get pushed off the board and die immediately. And if you get the shield, you can get hit twice. So that's cool. But, like, one of the things that I would want to do, especially with this idea of abandoning the floor, like, if I go up to a different floor to start again, and I have whatever abilities that I've gotten, well, A, I really like going to the upgraded health tile to pick up a shield again. You have this power-up that you've created, you've worked for it, and now you get to take advantage of that. I would make more of those. I would have that be more about what the game is. You know, specifically about, go here to do this so you can prepare for the next thing. As opposed to, I felt like I was acting much more short-term. I'm going to kill the thing in front of me and then figure out how to kill the next thing. So, if I have a bunch of these power-ups that I picked up on my floor and I go up to the next floor, I feel like I've progressed and I have this arsenal that I can go back down a floor if I feel like I'm overwhelmed. A bit more like flow. Once you come and go as you need to. And then the other thing that I would want to do is have some element of automation. So maybe I would have a tile that spawns a drone, and the drone just follows your path. It does whatever you were doing. It'll just keep doing that. The result is that the floor tries to take care of itself, and you can go back and try to reconfigure it. I don't know what mechanics I would do to allow you to reconfigure it, but I think that, like, being stuck with whatever you had sucks.
Yeah. I mean, there is, I've always appreciated, I don't know if this fades the longer that you play, but whenever a new tile appears, you have a small number of options that you can make that tile, like, that you can make it a healing one, or an attack one, or a poison one. But you always have, like, three options. Sometimes it's weird, they'll just be two of the same thing, like, it'll be a poison, or a health, which isn't the best. On the one hand, I like that kind of limit, being, like, you are constricted by RNG, just sort of the random roll of the die that the game gives you. I like the way that that shapes the board, but I also wonder if it would just be better to have an option. Maybe once you've filled out the entire board, then you have a move that lets you change a tile to whatever you need it to be. Like, pick specifically through all the, like, six options or whatever.
Yeah, basically a respec option. Mm-hmm. So there are sometimes waves where you can pick a new tile and it can be anything. Mm. There'll be empty tiles that you can pick from the six. Mm. And I do like that you start off at the mercy of RNG and you do the best with what you have. I just want to not be beholden to that forever. Right. I would like to have some mechanic by which I can go back in and optimize and come up with a plan for how to use this. And, of course, the better I can map my ideal strategy to the RNG that I got, the more resources I'll have for the next floor, for whatever else. But in addition to having the automated aspect make it so that I feel like I've progressed to the point where this floor is solved, it'll take care of itself, which wouldn't always be true, because if you're not on a floor, I guess the bugs would go after the drone spawning. Mm-hmm. And once they've defeated that, now the drone would be an enemy and you'd have to go back and retake that floor. And that would be part of what I'm talking about with the extra layers of failure. Both in having extra layers of mastery, of being able to have the power up and being able to have the drone and all that stuff. Once those get turned against you, you have yourself at a disadvantage, but still not failure. Mm. And the more levels of failure, I think, the better it would be. Those are some of the initial thoughts of the game that I have not yet made to prove to Tom Francis that he's wrong about everything.
I'm really interested in this game as a piece of art, which is a weird thing to say, but hang in with me. When you brought up that it was a response to a different game, mm-hmm. it sort of recontextualized it as a part of a larger conversation and a game that was, like, it was specifically trying to say something with its mechanics that was about its mechanics. Not necessarily about a story or like a larger personal feeling, but this is a designer talking to another designer. And so often in art history, especially with like the modern art phase, is so much a convoluted conversation with its past and with its present, which is why you have so many of these paintings in museums that don't make any fucking sense when you look at them. It's because you don't have the context of the past. Like, this is kind of a weird pull, but like the painting Olympia, which was done in the 30s or 40s, is a response to a much, much older painting, a classical painting of, I think, like, Venus or something. But they're both nudes reclining and looking at the camera. The older one is very, very much classical, very that sort of repose that invites your gaze. And Olympia is a painting of a known sex worker in Paris. She is looking at the camera, but it's not an invitation to look at her. She is looking at you. If you were just looking at that painting, you're like, oh, this is a nice picture of a person, and you might not spend any time with it. But if you were engaged in part of the larger conversation of art history, then you would be like, oh, this is really interesting because of the symbols and the variations that are in this painting versus the thing that came before it. So I think that, like, I probably wouldn't play this game again, but I would be interested in looking at it in response to Imbroglio.
Well, Tom Francis wrote an article to accompany the release of Morphblade that mm-hmm. includes a lot of his thoughts about the changes that he made and why he made them. And from reading that, one of his original criticisms about Imbroglio was the walls. Mm. And so that's why he got rid of them. And interestingly, walls were among my first thoughts for things that I'd want to put into this, but not the way that I then learned Imbroglio had done it. I wouldn't be using it to impede player movement, mm. but I was thinking of it as being a part of how that drone gets its circuit, how it gets its path, and also how you would set up the power-ups that you would do. Mm. If you go from this tile to that tile, you get this set of power-ups. If you go from that tile to this tile, you get this set of power-ups.
Mm, so, like, the movement is what you...
Exactly. You get it, yeah. Exactly. So that it's more about how you path through this as opposed to where... Like, the history of where you've been determines what you can do and not simply where you are.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty deep.
Yeah, right? Games, they can sound deep sometimes without actually saying things. But, yeah, I
boy, howdy, is that true?
I really like the idea of using game mechanics to discuss game mechanics. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the game that I would make still purely speculatively. I've done none of that stuff, so mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like yet. I don't know what choices I'll end up making. But I really do like that approach, and I want to toss my hat into the burning pile.
I would actually be interested in playing more games like this. Not necessarily a strategy game, but games that are short and designed to talk about a particular thing. Especially games that aren't fun, I'm actually kind of interested in. There was a manifesto jam that happened earlier this year that happened in sort of the indie game space. That was just like writing a manifesto about making games, about playing games, about writing games, about thinking about games. And a bunch of the variants there were a game does not have to be fun. A game does not have to be finished. A game does not have to be a polished or enjoyable experience to have merit. And I kind of want to get into that rabbit hole and see what people are saying in that space.
Yeah.
The kind of work that people are doing. Which is... Maybe a weird and kind of a backhanded compliment to Tom Francis, but...
Yeah.
It sounds kind of mind-blowing because like of how we're conditioned to think of games.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the one with the chip against Tom Francis? Yeah. Savage.
Gunpoint was good, don't get me wrong.
I really want to play Heat Signature, too.
Me too.
Love you, Tom. So that's Morph Blade. I don't know that I have anything else to say about it. I look forward to our follow-up episode on it, though. Like, especially whenever I have the game, I'll be able to talk further about it. Mm. But
so if you have input you would like to say about Morph Blade or games that aren't fun, or things like that, you can send us an email at backlog@teacabbage.com.
Yeah, now we're doing our email segment as part of a separate episode. It just tends to make more sense. If we got any email about Morph Blade, then we would have been talking about it here, but
the first email episode will go up either before this one or after. The plan is to stagger updates, so the backlog updates every 2 weeks, and the plan is to have the email episodes in the week between them.
Yeah, so that way we can have our weekly content and fit the shape that YouTube stuff and podcasts and everybody says you're supposed to do that. Let's do the thing that everybody says you're supposed to do. Maybe let's be conventionally successful, maybe. I don't know. So...
Fuck that. Let's make weird bad things.
All right, sign me up. That's exactly what I'm here for. So yeah, go ahead and give us any insight or feedback into Morph Blade or Imbroglio as well. I'd love to hear more about that game.
Yes, yes.
But if you would like to contribute to the conversation in 2 weeks, feel free to email us about a game called Dreaming Sarah, which Christian has chosen, and which I know nothing about.
But you bought. You own.
That's what this podcast is about. This is going to happen a lot, you guys.
It sounds promising and entertaining. And it looks cute.
Cool. Yeah.
That's what everybody wants. That's promising everyone. And entertaining and cute. Mm-hmm. You hear that, Tom? Like... So yeah, rate, subscribe, tell your friends.
Do those things.
Hey, outro stuff.
You could leave us a review on iTunes. I think we're on iTunes. You should look us up and put in a review. I think so.
You should look us up on iTunes and then tell us if we're on iTunes.
Yeah.
You should do that. Help us.
Yeah. Please. God, we're so lost.
Yeah.
Alright, well, thanks for listening to The Backlog.
Another backlog in The Backlog.
There it is.
Another log spent in the can. Back.
Nope. No. Not that.
Back, put it back. Put it away, put it in. Trash.